Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It's been a busy season for political analysts. The cable news channels are wall-to-wall with campaign news, and NPR has featured live coverage of primary election nights in many states, including Wisconsin.
And of course, it's been a busy season for political satire as well, from Saturday Night Live to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And there's been no shortage of material for NPR's weekly comedy news quiz. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me will record this week from the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee on Thursday evening. Ahead of that, host Peter Sagal joins us from the show's offices at WBEZ in Chicago. Peter Sagal, nice to talk with you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Always a great pleasure to show up on any show named for any climactic phenomenon.
and Lake Effect just narrowly edged out Tsunami for what we were going to call this.
My favorite radio show is Coriolis out of Honduras, but they weren't available today.
So you are in this kind of strange position now. Car Talk is in permanent reruns.
Yes.
Prairie Home is in a reboot. Do you feel like, is Wait, Wait the NPR entertainment standard bearer now?
Oh, absolutely. We are going to, we're just moments, I think, months away from declaring our supremacy and having all the other weekend hosts rounded up and put into re-education camps. And our goal, of course, is to have every public radio station across the country, including, of course, yours, just broadcast Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me over and over again. We're going to let Scott Simon go. Then we're going to go on after him and just be on. We're going to let Ira Glass have an hour, but it's going to be like at like 9 p.m. Saturday night just to humiliate him a little bit. And then it's going to go back to us. That is our ultimate goal, and we're almost there.
Well, and at some point, cage match with Ophira Eisenberg?
Oh, absolutely. No. Ophira, I think, is going to get a job in my administration. We're going to buy her off.
So this is going to be maybe a pretty long preface to this question, but here goes.
All right. I'll do something else while you wind up.
Yeah, exactly. Check your text
exactly.
messages or
go
whatever.
Ahead. Go for it.
So there was a time a few years ago I was working in Arizona, and I interviewed, I think it was the state secretary of agriculture or commerce or one of those departments. And he was this pretty conservative Republican guy. This is like 10 years ago. And when he found out what station I was working for, he said, "Oh, that's the station that airs the funniest show on the radio," meaning Wait, Wait.
And, oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very nice.
But anyway, he talked about being able to laugh at people in his own profession, politicians. And,
yes.
And I wonder if, like, 10 years later, do you think politicians are laughing at themselves anymore?
That is an interesting question. And even though it took really way too long to ask, and I think you should be ashamed of
Terry
yourself.
Gross length there.
Terry Gross actually would still be going on. But that's Terry, but she has special rules. I have been thinking about that a lot. And I have been thinking about it in connection with, guess who, Donald Trump. And the reason is because he's very hard to make fun of. There's not a lot of joy in it. And part of the problem, of course, as any comedian will tell you, and I've been talking to other people who have just similar jobs to mine, people who write for Colbert or Bill Maher or whatever, that you can't make up anything funny for humor purposes that he might do or say that he won't actually have already done or said, right? He's so bizarre and extreme and exaggerated. He's like a self-caricature. There's nothing a comedian can come up with to mock him because he'll already go there and do it, you know?
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of, maybe the best way to do it is to go in the other direction. I mean, I remember this Saturday Night Live sketch.
You're thinking of the great Ronald Reagan sketch?
Exactly.
One of the greatest, funniest things ever broadcast.
Yes.
Which, for those who are not as old as we are, this is a sketch. It was during the Ronald Reagan administration, which for your younger listeners, Ronald Reagan had this reputation of not being very smart, kind of this affable old man. And the sketch was Reagan just, he meet him and he's being a dunce, "Oh, hello," and just sort of nodding his head. And then as soon as like the public leaves the room, he's like this incredibly smart, on top of it, multilingual genius. And that was the joke, that they weren't making fun of him for being dumb. They were making fun of him for being secretly smart.
But,
so I see that.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. But that brings up the other thing that I've been thinking about and is related to your question, which is another reason it's not a lot of fun to make fun of Donald Trump, is because you know that if he happened to hear you, he wouldn't get it or appreciate it because he has no self-awareness. I contrast that with, say, Jeb Bush, who we made a lot of fun of prior to his falling out of the race earlier this year. And we made fun of him, for example, for his famous please clap moment. You may remember this when he made a stirring speech and nobody said anything. And he said, please clap. And here's the thing. It was funny. But you know, without even having to think about it, that he knew it was funny. He knew that he had just demonstrated a rather human foible and that he was being a goofball. And I will also say this about his brother, George W. Bush, a very different person, but someone who was also very aware of his own foibles and who led with them. You know, he made us aware of them too.
Right. This is a guy that choked on a pretzel.
Right. And he knows this. And he knows that he is. And I actually think that's somewhat endearing about him. I think that's one of the reasons why he had such popularity is that among his party, is that he had a real humility to him. Bill Clinton was on the show once. And I asked Bill Clinton, I said, did you ever listen to our show? And he said, no, not really. And I was like, thank God. we just basically lived off Monica Lewinsky in the first 2 years of our show. But then he went on to say, oh, I used to love it. You know, he did an appearance with Daryl Hammett. He used to play him on Saturday Night Live. And again, for the younger listeners who may not remember this, Bill Clinton was savaged every day, even before the sex scandals, but after the sex scandal. It was just incredible how much fun he got made of him. Jay Leno used to do like a solid 5 minutes of Monica Lewinsky jokes every night. And it turns out Bill Clinton knew that, and he didn't mind. And I like that. And I appreciate that. And I think that it's not only a positive aspect of all of these people, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, I think Barack Obama, but it's encouraging. It's like, yeah, it's good. I'm glad they get it. And Donald Trump doesn't get it, which is another reason why it's so hard to make fun of him. I mean, our kind of humor that we do, I like to think, is based on human foibles. We don't make a lot of jokes, despite the fact people demand that we do, about people's policy positions. Most it was, oh, you hear about this healthcare plan? It's ridiculous. We make fun of people. We make jokes about people. And what we're making jokes about is kind of a human frailty and a human foible and a human weakness, which we all share. And I honestly believe that somehow knowing that they're out there somewhere and they would understand that, yeah, they did a goofy thing, said a goofy thing, were goofy, makes it easier to do it. So I actually think the politicians I've met, certainly, and talked to do have a sense of humor and should have a sense of humor. I would say it's almost necessary to do their jobs. You get a lot of grief out there.
Well, and I wonder if taken as a whole, I mean, I think back on the presidential campaigns that I have viewed in the, last 100 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Because
we are old.
Yes, exactly. This is a recurrent theme on today's interview.
Yeah.
And each of them had their bizarre, funny moments, but they were kind of isolated to those bizarre, funny moments. I mean, you can go back to the Gary Hart monkey business
right.
in 88, or you could flash forward to, 4 years ago and Herman Cain talking about, Uzbekistan
Stan.
And they were all sort of isolated moments. Is it more difficult to riff on this campaign as a whole, given just how surreal it has been?
This particular campaign is really testing everybody's ability to do our job, and primarily for the reason that I said it doesn't make any sense. And I think that is really the signature thing about this campaign, especially Trump. It doesn't make any sense. So, for example, many journalists would look at Ted Cruz, and I don't think I'm going out of my lane to say that most journalists probably would not agree with Ted Cruz unless they're committed conservative bloggers, right? He's speaking for and to a very, very hard right audience. But nonetheless, journalists can look at him and go, oh, I understand his point of view. I understand his appeal. I don't agree with him, but I can see how people who do agree with him would be very excited by his candidacy. That makes sense. And then they look at Donald Trump, who gets up in front of crowds and meanders through this meaningless, rude argle-bargle in which he clearly has no idea what he's talking about, no sense of his own self, no clue as to anything, starting with basic human behavior. And the people go, yay, we love you, we'll vote for Trump. And I think it mystifies everybody. I don't know a single journalist who is really, can understand or explain his appeal. So in a weird way, we're sort of beyond analysis. We're beyond anything that makes sense. And it also makes it harder to joke about, because for the same reason, how do you make jokes about chaos? It's like making fun of a car crash. It just happened. And you're like, oh my God, it's a car crash. Oh my God.
Do you think it speaks to the remarkable talents of the editors on The Apprentice?
You know, it's hard to say. I guess so. I think Donald Trump is somebody who can succeed as a performer for that very reason, that there are editors, there are people around him who are making sure that you never see his craziest behavior. But I think he's a guy who learned a couple of tricks early on about being, you know, being a winner and brash and bold and putting down the people around him, and he found a segment of the audience who wanted to watch that. So he just does the same thing in any situation, and he thinks it'll work, and so far it has. And maybe he's much smarter about, you know, human beings and politics than I am.
Do you feel like is there a parallel between watching this and watching professional wrestling?
I've met one or two professional wrestlers. I talked to John Cena once, and the difference between professional wrestling and this is that they know it's fake, and they know they're just doing it for entertainment, and they're actually very, at least the few I've spoken to, are very smart, self-aware people. Who know, and we're putting on this big show for people. They know it's a show. We know it's a show. We're committed to the show. We're going to do a great job of the show. We're professionals. We know how to do this. I don't think Trump knows it's a show.
Well, speaking of
shows, this is getting very existential.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say. I feel like we should.
What'd you listen to in public radio this morning? Oh, just two old white guys getting depressed about stuff. Oh, sounds pretty typical. Which show was that? It could have been pretty much any of them.
Should we talk about our receding hairlines now?
Let's do that. Let's talk about you know, retirement plans and quinoa.
And I feel like if we talked about receding hairlines, we would invariably go back to Trump too.
There you are. You know. Yeah, it's a little bit like we're all going through this collective trauma right now, and nobody really understands it, and we're all trying to process it in our own ways. I'm trying to make jokes about it. Other people are like finding other places to live in Canada, but we're all sort of going through it.
Well, speaking of the show, there is definitely an awareness that that you are on a show, and that show will be in Milwaukee in the coming days.
Yes, it will.
So give us at least a preview. Who should we expect to hear on said show?
Well, this is the exciting part. Let me look at our board here. So we have a fine panel. We're bringing in Mo Rocca, the famous television's own Mo Rocca, who we rarely see because he's so busy doing other things. So he'll be there in Milwaukee. Roxanne Roberts will be there. We think of her as the Kitty Carlisle of what we've done. Tell me. And Luke Burbank will be here, who's always fun and a little nuts, which is why he's charming.
You managed to keep Charlie Pierce out of Wisconsin for once.
You know, it's hard to keep him away from Wisconsin. Charlie, as you may or may not know, is in Wisconsin, I think, or he has been traveling around the country covering the campaign for Esquire. He writes the politics blog, and he is just. I mean, the only good thing about this entire political cataclysm that's going on is that it gives Charlie Pierce something to match his talent, because nobody is better at writing scornful invective than our very own Charlie Pierce. A graduate of Marquette, as everybody should know.
Yes. I feel like scornful invective, he should be like the lead guitar for a band called Scornful Invective.
I know, he's so good at it. He was writing a piece about Ted Cruz, and he talked about how Ted Cruz took the temperature of the room with his tongue. It was like such a good line. Oh, my God. He's so good.
Special guests while you're here?
Oh, our special guest here. I have the name right here. It is NASCAR's Matt Kenseth.
He's Wisconsin native.
Wisconsin native. I think he grew up in one of the suburbs to the south, I think. I don't know. Proud Wisconsin, Milwaukee area native. We'll be talking to him.
Well, outstanding. So any parting thoughts on your trip up I-94?
No, we love Milwaukee. We were very excited because it took a long time for a variety of reasons to make it to Milwaukee for our show. We played pretty much the rest of the country before we were allowed to drive 90 miles up to Lakeshore and do it there. And so we're very excited to go back. The Riverside is without question one of my favorite theaters.
All right. Well, Peter Sagal, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Looking forward to seeing you soon.
I'm looking forward to being there.
Peter Sagal is host of the NPR comedy news quiz, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The show tapes this week at Milwaukee's Riverside Theater on Thursday night, and you can find out more information and how to get tickets at WUWM.com.